Good morning and welcome to Way Too Early, the show that's always pulling for Team USA. I'm Elise Jordan on this Wednesday, July 28th. We'll start out with the news. We begin with the Capitol riot investigation and the emotional testimony we heard yesterday from officers who responded to the January 6th insurrection. In visceral, unsparing language, they shared their experience defending the U.S. Capitol. They bore witness for history about battling the mob of rioters who stormed the Capitol to prevent the certification of Joe Biden as a democratically elected president. Here are some of the most disturbing, heart-wrenching moments of their testimony at yesterday's hearing.
On January 6th, for the first time, I was more afraid to work at the Capitol than my entire deployment to Iraq. The rioters called me traitor, a disgrace, and shouted that I, an army veteran and a police officer, should be executed. The rioters attempted to breach the Capitol were shouting, Trump, send us. Pick the right side. We want Trump. I vividly heard officers screaming in agony and pain just an arm length from me. I didn't know at that time, but that was Officer Hodges, and he's here today to testify. I, too, was being crushed by the rioters. I could feel myself losing oxygen and recall thinking to myself, this is how I'm going to die, defending this entrance.
I ended up on my hands and knees and blind. The medical mask I was wearing at the time to protect myself from the coronavirus was pulled up over my eyes so I couldn't see. I braced myself against the impact of their blows and feared the worst. I was effectively defenseless and gradually sustaining injury from the increasing pressure of the mob. Directly in front of me, a man seized the opportunity of my vulnerability, grabbed the front of my gas mask, and used it to beat my head against the door. He switched to pulling it off my head, the straps stretching against my skull and straining my neck. He never uttered any words I recognized, but opted instead for guttural screams. I remember him foaming at the mouth. He also put his cell phone in his mouth so that he had both hands free to assault me.
I told him to just leave the Capitol, and in response they yelled, no man, this is our house. President Trump invited us here. We're here to stop the steal. One woman in a pink MAGA shirt yelled, you hear that, guys? This voted for Joe Biden. Then the crowd, perhaps around 20 people, joined in screaming, boo! No one had ever called me a while wearing the uniform of a Capitol Police officer. Another black officer later told me he had been confronted by insurrectionists in the Capitol who told him, put your gun down and we'll show you what kind of you really are.
I was grabbed, beaten, tased, all while being called a traitor to my country. At some point during the fighting, I was dragged from the line of officers and into the crowd. I heard someone scream, I got one. As I was swarmed by a violent mob, they ripped off my badge. They grabbed and stripped me of my radio. They seized ammunition that was secured to my body. They began to beat me with their fists and with what felt like hard metal objects. At one point, I came face to face with an attacker who repeatedly lunged for me and attempted to remove my firearm. I heard chanting from some in the crowd, get his gun and kill him with his own gun. I was aware enough to recognize I was at risk of being stripped of and killed with my own firearm. I was electrocuted again and again and again with a taser. I feel like I went to hell and back to protect them and the people in this room. But too many are now telling me that hell doesn't exist or that hell actually wasn't that bad. The indifference shown to my colleagues is disgraceful.
Not only do Americans owe these officers a debt for their service protecting democracy on that horrible day, But future generations are going to benefit because they sat in front of the world and they shared these powerful firsthand accounts for history. Yesterday's hearing included some never-before-seen video from January 6th and audio from officers on the ground. A warning, some may find this footage disturbing.
Metal, sharpened objects, missiles to include bottles and rocks, and hand-thrown chemical-grade fireworks.
House Republicans, Congressman Adam Kinzinger and Congresswoman Liz Cheney, they railed against their own party's response yesterday to the riots, and they vowed to ensure that the attack of that magnitude will never happen again.
The American people deserve the full and open testimony of every person with knowledge of the planning and preparation for January 6th. We must know what happened here at the Capitol. We must also know what happened every minute of that day in the White House, every phone call, every conversation, every meeting leading up to, during, and after the attack.
I never expected a day to be quite as emotional for me as it has been. I've talked to a number of you and gotten to know you. I think it's important to tell you right now, though. You guys may, like, individually feel a little broken. You guys all talk about the effects you have to deal with, and, you know, you talk about the impact of that day. But you guys won. You guys held. You know, democracies are not defined by our bad days. We're defined by how we come back from bad days. How we take accountability for that. And for all the overheated rhetoric surrounding this committee, our mission is very simple. It's to find the truth, and it's to ensure accountability.
Joining us now, NBC News Capitol Hill correspondent Leanne Caldwell. Leanne, you were in the room yet for yesterday's hearing. What did you find to be the most surprising or important moment?
Good morning, Elise. I was in the room for most of that yesterday, and it was really hard to sit there in this very serious, somber, sad room. But watching these officers watch their video body cam footage was probably the hardest part for them, having to relive this experience again. What came out for me out of this hearing is that the point of this hearing was not only to tell these officers' stories, to let them tell their firsthand accounts of the front lines of that day, but also to refute all of the January 6th denying that has been going on among the Republican Party up on Capitol Hill and in conservative media. And that was an important thing to get on the record for this committee and also to push back against these January 6th deniers. And so while for all of us who cover this very closely and watch every incremental new piece of information that comes out, there was nothing really, quote, new that we learned yesterday. But for those Americans who aren't watching this on a daily basis, whose job it is not to follow every incremental step, there was a lot of new information because this is the first time the Congress has heard directly from rank and file police officers. And I will say, Elise, that I've been talking to Capitol Police officers for the past few months, and they have been wanting this. They have been wanting to the Congress to hear their stories, not just from the top brass who were finger pointing left, right, and center, but what they went through on that day, at least.
Well, and Leanne, you're so right that it was just so powerful to hear the totality of what happened and to hear it firsthand from the officers who were on the ground tasked with defending the Capitol. How are Congressman Kinzinger and Congressman Cheney's fellow Republicans reacting to yesterday's hearing?
Well, the Republican leadership, before the hearing even started, held a press conference yesterday led by Leader McCarthy, his original choices to sit on this committee and other members of leadership. And they tried to distract and redirect the conversation in blaming Speaker Pelosi for what happened on January 6th. Now, we're going to hear this argument over and over again. This is the same argument they said throughout the day yesterday when they went on Fox News and elsewhere. And, you know, I want to walk through it because we're going to hear it over and over again. Speaker Pelosi is not in charge of day-to-day security at the Capitol. Speaker Pelosi did not say the election was stolen. Speaker Pelosi did not call her supporters to the Capitol on that day. You know, and there are some conversations with the U.S. Capitol Police Board that does have oversight on the security decisions of that day with leadership offices. But if Speaker Pelosi was to blame, then they also need to be asking questions about what Leader McConnell, who was majority leader at the time, what he did, and is he to blame? Now, these leaders had very small roles because they would perhaps talk about the security posture in the days, in the weeks leading up. We don't know what those conversations are, but this was just an attempt from Republicans to distract from what the former president did, what members of their party did. And that is something that we have not heard from them. And it's interesting that Adam Kinzinger and Liz Cheney are the only two to bring up members of their party in the hearing yesterday and the former president, at least.
Leanne, thank you so much. And thank you for pointing out the facts behind who is responsible for Capitol security and that Nancy Pelosi is not to blame for what went down on January 6th. I've worked in Republican politics and I understand that blaming Nancy Pelosi can sometimes be an effective political ploy. But right now, this is way bigger than that. So thank you.
Stay up to date on the biggest issues of the day with the MSNBC Daily Newsletter. Each morning, you'll get analysis by experts you trust, video highlights from your favorite shows.
2024 is now truly the most important election in the history of our country.
Previews of our podcasts and documentaries, plus written perspectives from the newsmakers themselves, all sent directly to your inbox each morning. Get the best of MSNBC all in one place. Sign up for MSNBC Daily at MSNBC.com.
U.S. gymnast Simone Biles won't defend her Olympic title in tomorrow's final individual all-around competition at the Tokyo Games. U.S. Gymnastics announced early this morning that Biles has withdrawn from the event, quote, in order to focus on her mental health, and that she will, quote, continue to be evaluated daily to determine whether or not to participate in next week's individual event finals. The four-time Olympic gold medalist shocked the world yesterday when she pulled out of the U.S. team gymnastics finals, saying the emotional toll of the games, not a physical injury, prompted her withdrawal. Biles told NBC, quote, physically, I'm feeling good, I'm in shape. But she added, quote, emotionally, it varies on the time and moment. Coming to the Olympics and being head start isn't an easy feat. We also have to focus on ourselves because at the end of the day, we're human too, Biles said, according to the AP. We have to protect our mind and our body rather than just go out there and do what the world wants us to do. Biles withdrew from competition yesterday following one rotation on a vault in which she bailed out of her twist and stumbled on the landing before exiting the floor with the team doctor. She later returned in a sweatshirt to cheer on her team in the remaining rotations from the sidelines. But her exit from competition opened the door for the team of Russian athletes to win the gold for the first time in nearly three decades. Still, Biles expressed her pride in her Olympic teammates on Instagram, writing in part, quote, they stepped up when I couldn't. Thanks for being there for me and for having my back. Biles is the first woman since 1992 to advance to all six possible gymnastics finals at the Olympics. So she could still possibly compete in four more events in Tokyo. There was a second showdown last night in the Olympic pool between U.S. swimmer Katie Ledecky and Australia's Ariane Titmus, who dethroned Ledecky in the 400-meter freestyle on Monday. But Ledecky was left off the podium in the 200-meter final, finishing fifth as Titmus set a new Olympic record to win the gold. And about an hour later, Ledecky returned to claim gold in the Olympic debut of the women's 1500-meter freestyle race. And it was her sixth career gold and the 250th gold medal for the U.S. Olympic swimming team. And teammate Erica Sullivan picked up the silver. And U.S. swimming added another silver and bronze last night with the performances from Alex Walsh and Katie Douglas in the 200-meter individual medley. Meanwhile, the fastest swimmer in the world, Caleb Dressel, is poised to bring home another gold for Team USA after advancing to the final in the men's 100-meter freestyle last night with the fastest time recorded in the world this year. And from the diving platform this morning, American duo Andrew Coppabianco and Michael Hixon earned silver in the men's synchronized springboard final. The U.S. men's basketball team returned to its winning ways this morning, bouncing back from its opening loss. It was a streak of 25 straight Olympic wins come to an end with a 120-66 victory over Iran. Meanwhile, the women's 3-on-3 team will compete for a gold medal after defeating France in this morning's semifinal. The U.S. currently leads the world with 30 total medals. The CDC is issuing a major reversal of mask guidelines and now recommends fully vaccinated people wear masks in low vaccination areas. This comes amid unsettling new science revealing that fully vaccinated people can still spread the Delta variant. NBC's Gabe Gutierrez has the latest.
Another about face. The CDC once again recommending indoor mask wearing, even among vaccinated people, in areas with high transmission rates, saying that while vaccinated people rarely get COVID, new data shows if they do get infected with the Delta variant, they could be carrying higher levels of the virus than previously thought, increasing the risk of infecting others.
This new guidance underscores how serious the situation is for unvaccinated people, but for vaccinated people as well.
President Biden weighing in on mandating vaccines for all federal employees.
That's under consideration right now, but if you're not vaccinated, you're not nearly as smart as I thought you were.
But new CDC guidance on masks is a sharp turn from just 2 months ago.
This is a great day for America.
When vaccinated Americans were told they no longer needed to mask up indoors. In Washington, Vice President Harris seen wearing a mask indoors because of rising cases there. Nearly two-thirds of U.S. counties have high or substantial COVID transmission, including most of Georgia, where some are skeptical of how effective this new mask guidance will be.
I don't like being restricted like that, and I just feel I like to free, I like to breathe air.
Multiple states have passed laws restricting local governments from imposing mask orders. Many of those states now have high transmission rates. So, in effect, the new guidance will be more of a recommendation than a mandate. In another swift reversal, the CDC is now advising everyone in K-12 schools to wear masks indoors, even teenagers who are vaccinated.
To hear that not only validates but reassures us that we've been executing decisions in the right direction.
Dr. Lisa Herring is the superintendent of Atlanta Public Schools, who just days ago announced that her district would adopt an indoor mask mandate.
What do you tell parents who say, look, the government is not going to tell me what to do with my kid?
So we've heard those voices. And we recognize and honor that. We have a responsibility as a school system to be responsible for all students. A household has a responsibility for those that are within it.
Across the country, a patchwork of school policies. The nation's three biggest districts, New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago, will require masks. In Houston and Miami-Dade County, they're optional. Ambria Bear in Atlanta is so frustrated, she's decided to homeschool her 11-year-old daughter.
It's confusing to parents. It's like one school district is going this way, but one school district a few miles up the highway is different.
The CDC director says she realizes this new mask guidance is unwelcome news, that it weighs heavily on her, but it is not a decision officials took lightly.
Joining us now, clinical director of the Division of Infectious Diseases at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston, Dr. Paul Sachs. Dr. Sachs, thanks for joining us. There's a lot of confusion surrounding the CDC's recommendation for vaccinated Americans to still mask up indoors. Can you explain what exactly the CDC is recommending and why?
Sure. It comes down to the fact that the Delta variant turns out to be so much more transmissible than the previous virus that was circulating, that even among our vaccinated people, we can still get the infection and potentially can still spread it to others. And that's reflected in rising caseloads around the country. You know, this is something that we did not want to see, but started to see. And since we started to see it, I'm glad the CDC responded the way they did. So I would recommend that people wear masks indoors in public places if they cannot be guaranteed that they're surrounded by other vaccinated individuals. And I also do support their recommendations for schools.
Dr. Sachs, so is it reasonable for the CDC to recommend that if adults mask if they're in close quarters with children under 12? Is that what the recommendations are saying? And please correct me if I misinterpreted, because this would mean masking up in your own home. And so I know that people are really recoiling and coiling at that.
Yeah. So, you know, the within your own home is a different situation, because within your own home, you're, of course, in your own little bubble. And there might be situations where you would do that in your own home, particularly if you were immune compromised. But for most people, masking within the household is not recommended. However, outside in public, especially in crowded places with poor ventilation, there is a risk. Right now, there's a lot of COVID-19 being transmitted. We're seeing rising numbers in practically all parts of the United States, in particular in regions with unvaccinated people have a high proportion of the population. And I would just caution people that this isn't over yet. As much as we're tired of it, and believe me, all of us are tired of it, this is a good recommendation.
Well, President Biden has confirmed that a vaccine mandate among federal employees is under consideration. Do you think that a vaccine mandate for federal employees will help slow the Delta variant?
Well, you might not be surprised to hear this, but I am very much in favor of vaccine mandates in any situation where other people are being put at risk. We know that the best way to prevent this infection is to get vaccinated. So that means businesses, schools, and other groups such as the federal government can make this move. We've already done it for lots of different other situations. I like to cite the United States as being leaders in this for school vaccine requirements. We can adopt this for COVID-19 and we can get a higher proportion of the population vaccinated. Once that happens, I really think we'll start to turn the tide and make this just another virus that's circulating in the community and not one that is so life-threatening.
Oh, that day, turning the tide and just another virus. Dr. Paul Sachs, thanks for coming on and educating us today. The CDC is issuing a major reversal of mask guidelines and now recommends fully vaccinated people wear masks in low vaccination areas. This comes amid unsettling new science revealing that fully vaccinated people can still spread the Delta variant. NBC's Gabe Gutierrez has the latest.
Another about face. The CDC once again recommending indoor mask wearing, even among vaccinated people, in areas with high transmission rates, saying that while vaccinated people rarely get COVID, new data shows if they do get infected with the Delta variant, they could be carrying higher levels of the virus than previously thought, increasing the risk of infecting others.
This new guidance underscores how serious the situation is for unvaccinated people, but for vaccinated people as well.
President Biden weighing in on mandating vaccines for all federal employees.
That's under consideration right now, but if you're not vaccinated, you're not nearly as smart as I thought you were.
But new CDC guidance on masks is a sharp turn from just 2 months ago.
This is a great day for America.
When vaccinated Americans were told they no longer needed to mask up indoors. In Washington, Vice President Harris seen wearing a mask indoors because of rising cases there. Nearly two-thirds of U.S. counties have high or substantial COVID transmission, including most of Georgia, where some are skeptical of how effective this new mask guidance will be.
I don't like being restricted like that, and I just feel I like to breathe air.
Multiple states have passed laws restricting local governments from imposing mask orders. Many of those states now have high transmission rates. So, in effect, the new guidance will be more of a recommendation than a mandate. In another swift reversal, the CDC is now advising everyone in K-12 schools to wear masks indoors, even teenagers who are vaccinated.
To hear that not only validates but reassures us that we've been executing decisions in the right direction.
Dr. Lisa Herring is the superintendent of Atlanta Public Schools, who just days ago announced that her district would adopt an indoor mask mandate.
What do you tell parents who say, look, the government is not going to tell me what to do with my kid?
So we've heard those voices, and we recognize and honor that. We have a responsibility as a school system to be responsible for all students. A household has a responsibility for those that are within it.
Across the country, a patchwork of school policies. The nation's three biggest districts, New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago, will require masks. In Houston and Miami-Dade County, they're optional. Ambria Bear in Atlanta is so frustrated, she's decided to homeschool her 11-year-old daughter.
It's confusing to parents. It's like one school district is going this way, but one school district a few miles up the highway is different.
The CDC director says she realizes this new mask guidance is unwelcome news, that it weighs heavily on her, but it is not a decision officials took lightly.
Joining us now, clinical director of the Division of Infectious Diseases at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston, Dr. Paul Sachs. Dr. Sachs, thanks for joining us. There's a lot of confusion surrounding the CDC's recommendation for vaccinated Americans to still mask up indoors. Can you explain what exactly the CDC is recommending and why?
Sure. It comes down to the fact that the Delta variant turns out to be so much more transmissible than the previous virus that was circulating, that even among our vaccinated people, we can still get the infection and potentially can still spread it to others. And that's reflected in rising caseloads around the country. You know, this is something that we did not want to see, but started to see. And since we started to see it, I'm glad the CDC responded the way they did. So I would recommend that people wear masks indoors in public places if they cannot be guaranteed that they're surrounded by other vaccinated individuals. And I also do support their recommendations for schools.
Dr. Sachs, so is it reasonable for the CDC to recommend that if adults mask if they're in close quarters with children under 12? Is that what the recommendations are saying? And please correct me if I misinterpreted, because this would mean masking up in your own home. And so I know that people are really recoiling at that.
Yeah. So, you know, the within your own home is a different situation, because within your own home, you're, of course, in your own little bubble. And there might be situations where you would do that in your own home, particularly if you are immune compromised. But for most people, masking within the household is not recommended. However, outside in public, especially in crowded places with poor ventilation, there is a risk. Right now, there's a lot of COVID-19 being transmitted. We're seeing rising numbers in practically all parts of the United States, in particular in regions with unvaccinated people have a high proportion of the population. And I would just caution people that this isn't over yet. As much as we're tired of it, and believe me, all of us are tired of it, this is a good recommendation.
Well, President Biden has confirmed that a vaccine mandate among federal employees is under consideration. Do you think that a vaccine mandate for federal employees will help slow the Delta variant?
Well, you might not be surprised to hear this, but I am very much in favor of vaccine mandates in any situation where other people are being put at risk. We know that the best way to prevent this infection is to get vaccinated. So that means businesses, schools, and other groups such as the federal government can make this move. We've already done it for lots of different other situations. I like to cite the United States as being leaders in this for school vaccine requirements. We can adopt this for COVID-19, and we can get a higher proportion of the population vaccinated. Once that happens, I really think we'll start to turn the tide and make this just another virus that's circulating in the community and not one that is so life-threatening.
Oh, that day, turning the tide and just another virus. Dr. Paul Sachs, thanks for coming on and educating us.
It was a time of pride for the gay community.
I felt like I was part of a movement to liberate ourselves.
Then came a mysterious and devastating disease.
The latest figures from Los Angeles County.
We were describing evidence of a new acquired immune deficiency syndrome.
This is a story of strength and resilience.
This is our deciding moment. Together, we are greater than AIDS.
Commitment to Life, Sunday, April 28th at 9 p.m. Eastern on MSNBC and streaming now on Peacock.
Okay. Time now for something totally different. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio and veteran music producer Clive Davis are revealing the lineup for the city's mega concert. Headlining the celebratory comeback concert are Paul Simon, Jennifer Hudson, and the boss himself, Bruce Springsteen. Also performing LL Cool J, Jon Batiste, Kane Brown, Earth, Wind & Fire, Journey, Barry Manilow and Patti Smith. Officially titled We Love NYC, the homecoming concert, the event will take place on August 21st at 5 p.m. in Central Park. All concertgoers will need to provide proof of vaccination for admission, and 80% of the tickets will be free for an event that's going to be broadcast globally. And the U.S. government has sold a prized possession of a disgraced former pharmaceutical executive. The government sold Martin Scorsese's one-of-a-kind Wu-Tang Clan album to pay off the over $7 million he was ordered to forfeit after being convicted of fraud. The sale price and buyer information weren't released because of a confidentiality provision in the contract. Scorsese had previously purchased the album for over $2 million. It was promoted as a unique work of art with no physical or digital duplicate in existence. Nicknamed Pharma Bro, Scorsese is vilified for once hiking the price of Daraprim, which treated a potentially fatal infection, by more than 4,000%. He's currently serving a 7-year prison sentence for cheating investors in 2 hedge funds and trying to prop up stock prices of another drug company he led. A New York man is recovering after surviving an underground sidewalk explosion in Queens. Shocking footage shows smoke billowing from a sidewalk grate moments before Barry West steps over it. Then it erupts, briefly engulfing West in flames and knocking him to the ground. Oh no. He then appears to get up and walk away from the blaze. West suffered second-degree burns and is recovering at the hospital. Get well soon, Mr. West. The utility company Con Edison tells NBC News it is still investigating the cause of the explosion. So Lady Gaga is a decorated performer, Grammy winner, Oscar winner, and now Tokyo Olympian. Eagle-eyed little monsters watching the women's taekwondo event noticed that Jordan's Juliana Alsadek resembled the Chromatica singer. Unfortunately for Lady Gaga's Olympic doppelganger, she was eliminated from the games in round 16. In a surprise blow to the former president, Republican Jake Elzey has defeated Trump-backed rival Susan Wright in the special election to represent Texas' 6th U.S. congressional district. The House seat became available after the death of Congressman Ron Wright, who had lung cancer and contracted COVID-19. Susan Wright is his widow. Elzey barely made the May election runoff, only narrowly defeating a Democrat to face off against Wright. Trump endorsed Susan Wright early in the race, recorded a robocall for her late in the runoff, and he even headlined a telephone rally with voters on the eve of yesterday's election. In his victory speech, Elzey emphasized that voters in his district wanted a, quote, positive outlook, a Reagan Republican outlook for the future. New polling shows the majority of Americans are pessimistic about the state of politics in the country. In the latest AP and NORC Center poll, just 19% of adults said they were optimistic about how things were going, compared to 63% who said they were pessimistic. Optimism was even lower in the Republican Party, where just 10% had positive feelings about the current state of politics. Joining us now, former Republican Congressman Carlos Curbelo of Florida. He is an NBC News and MSNBC political contributor. Carlos, thanks so much for joining us this morning, way too early.
Elise, good morning. It's a pleasure to be with you.
So what did these results in Texas tell us about Trump's influence among Republican voters? What's your read on it?
Yeah, this is a big lesson for Republicans, Elise, and it's a wake-up call. Donald Trump does not own American politics, and he doesn't even necessarily own the Republican Party. For sure, he's still the dominant force, but here's a candidate who, as you said in his statement, he declared he's a Reagan Republican, which is kind of the distinction or the opposite these days of a Trump Republican. And he won despite Donald Trump putting his full backing behind Susan Wright, another candidate. So this is a big deal. This is going to get the attention of a lot of congressional Republicans, and hopefully they will get the message that they don't have to follow Donald Trump everywhere he goes and every time he says something, that they can be independent-minded and start breaking the party away from a force that's toxic and that's going to hold the party and the country back.
Well, and then yesterday we had the incredibly moving testimony of four officers who defended the Capitol on January 6th. And I just wanted to know what you thought of the testimony as someone who once served in those halls and how you think that your former Republican colleagues are going to react to what they heard yesterday in real time from the officers who took a vow to protect their security.
Well, Elise, it was moving. It was sobering. It was hard to watch sometimes when those videos played, just having to relive those moments for us as Americans. It's very difficult. I can only imagine for those officers who were on the front line, making sure that all of those members of Congress, Republicans and Democrats, were protected and were safe. Now, something that did come to mind is that Republicans over the last couple of years have talked a lot about the thin blue line and defending law enforcement, defending police when they're attacked unfairly. This is a big opportunity for them to show that they're serious about that. I wish there would have been an independent commission. I wish that there could be more Republicans on that committee. But I think Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger have done a good job of showing that there are Republicans with integrity. There are Republicans who are willing to come face to face with the darkness and the ugliness of January 6th and who are willing to work with Democrats to make sure this never happens again in our country, because everything was at risk that day. Our Constitution, our freedoms, law and order, the lives of those police officers. One of them did lose their lives. It was just a very difficult day, but an important day in our country's history yesterday.
You know, and certainly Congressman Kinzinger and Congresswoman Cheney deserve credit for being willing to step outside of partisanship and address the reality and the tragedy of what happened on that day. And you tweeted that day around noon on January 6th, "This is why I never supported nor voted for Donald Trump." And it was clear that day that something horrible had been wrought and stirred, and there was hope for a brief fleeting second that perhaps Republicans would take some accountability and denounce Donald Trump. But, you know, most of the other GOPers in Congress, they gave in to Donald Trump before and after. And so why is he still so successful at keeping his hold on these elected Republicans?
Well, at least because regrettably, a lot of Republicans are trying to lead from a position of fear. They're afraid of Donald Trump. They don't want him campaigning in their districts and their states against him. They're worried that if he recruits a primary candidate against them, that they might lose. But look at what happened in Texas yesterday. Mr. Elzey showed that you can stand on your own two feet. You can stand on principle. You don't have to be afraid of Donald Trump. You can take a message of truth and integrity to the voters and make it. And even if you don't, at least you lost with your integrity intact. So a big lesson yesterday. Hopefully it's the beginning of something new for the Republican Party, which means something new for the country.
Let's hope. We can hope. Former Congressman Carlos Curbelo, thank you. So why are you awake? Earlier in the show, this was our question. Melissa is up way too early, housebreaking her new puppy, Newt Dobbs, and that is certainly a lovely, lovely goal. Newt loves an early morning tug of war with my sock. Francesca tweeted this, "Up way too early with the baby." Oh, I feel you there, Francesca. And Diane emails, "I'm up this morning because my only child left to serve the country in the Navy yesterday. I'm super proud of him." We're proud too, Diane. And Mike tweets, "Today I'm awake way too early because the corgi I adopted just yesterday wants to see if Elise Jordan's corgi gets mentioned in today's show." Oh, I always love a good Bobby Sneakers mention, so thanks for twisting my arm and congratulations on adopting a corgi. It's going to be an interesting ride.
Hey everyone, it's Chris Hayes. This week on my podcast, Why Is This Happening?, we're back with another installment of our special series with Pod 2024, The Stakes. I'm talking to experts about both Joe Biden and Donald Trump's records on specific policy areas during their time as president. This week, economist Kim Clausing on taxes.
underfunding the IRS really serves the interest of dishonest people at the top rather than your typical worker who would benefit from being able to get their questions answered and getting their returns processed in a quick way.
That's this week on Why Is This Happening? Search for Why Is This Happening wherever you're listening right now and follow.